There's only one Joy.
Joy.org.au.
I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a crumb?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is broke right now.
And Joy with Outtakes here on Joy 94.9. And this week on Outtakes, we are spotlighting documentaries about famous queer luminaries. Think I Am Not Your Negro, the first major documentary to spot James Baldwin, and Tab Hunter Confidential, which takes us behind the scenes of the famed actor's career. Our guest this week is Peter Etiglou. I'm sorry that I mangled that. I'm sorry. I don't think I'm ever going to get the one. The director of McQueen, which is now in cinemas. McQueen explores the life of British fashion designer Alexander McQueen, who gained notice as designer for Givenchy and for Gucci before launching his own label. We also take a look at the much anticipated McKellen playing the part, the much anticipated new documentary about Sir Ian McKellen, which will be in cinemas later on this month.
What a show.
What a show. And a huge thank you to Simon for the news.
As always.
Of course, the lovely Glow team who brought us the Glow show just before. Now, because we did have the Glow show just on before, we did get a text in from someone anonymous asking for some advice regarding actually a domestic abuse topic. Because the Glow team have just left, my advice, please get in touch with QLife Switchboard 1-800-184-527. You can also chat them online at qlife.org.au. So I would be directing that text through to them.
Yeah. Good work. We're kind of coming off the back of a very great Melbourne International Film Festival. And when we had Al Costa on, I said to him, you know, one of my favourite parts of the festival is documentaries. I always, at least half of the films I see are docos. This year, we were just saying before, Alan, that we didn't get to as many films as we wanted, but luckily I caught up on 20 of them on recent flights overseas.
This is on your business class flight to New York.
Not at all. But yes, economy squashed in the back. But I think it's a really great sign always that not only do great documentaries come out at the festival, but afterwards, you know, they have that run in the cinemas. Mm. And the fact that we've got two at the moment, or McQueen's in cinemas now, and McKellen's coming.
End of September.
Yeah. You know, there's just so much great content out of there. And it's really nice that we're getting to be able to spotlight these and some of those other great docos that we've discussed previously.
So what is it about docos that interests you the most? What is it that grabs you?
You know, like, I love a great story, and I love, you know, that kind of fantasy element of it. But that flip side of it is, you know, sometimes it's like truth is stranger than fiction. And especially when it comes to a famous person and getting that access and getting that understanding of who they are, you know, behind it all. I think we see so much, and especially nowadays, we see so much more that's packaged and really well curated. Whereas being able to kind of step back and hear it in their own voice can be really fun and interesting, but it can also be really great to tap into those people that know them really well. And in the case of McQueen, you know, kind of look back at his life, which was cut really short way too soon.
Yeah, very tragic, wasn't it?
What about you, Alan?
Me
your and love of docos?
For docos, I guess I'm a huge fan of biographies. I love biographies. I love historical references. And you know me, I love a good period drama. So that really does translate, you know, Bonnet and Bustle. You know, that translates into docos. I mean, you know, I find them fascinating for the same reasons as you, Conrad. You really get to get a much better understanding of what's going on behind the mask, behind the image, and you get to peel back the layers and see what's really going on, especially for historical figures and for figures like pop figures in particular.
Pop culture, yeah. Documentaries, especially two that are directed at a queer audience or trying to explain a queer story to a broader audience, which is really what McQueen and McKellen does. And it doesn't shy away from either of those aspects of those, you know, subjects' lives, but it also explains how being gay, queer, whatever it was, however they identify, is so intrinsically linked to who they are, but not necessarily the only thing that they are, which I think we'll talk about later.
McKellen touches really on, that. Point on that,
which I really loved. But I think with McQueen, there's a real battle for McQueen's legacy. Like, for people have such strong opinions about who he was as a person and, you know, his, I mean, I kind of think of him not so much just as a fashion designer, not that there's anything wrong with that, but I consider him to be a really prolific artist as well. You know, like, there's a reason why these retrospectives of his clothes and his work are popping up in museums. Mm. Like, they're modern art. And he was such a contrast. He was such a contradiction. Mm. And I think this documentary does a really good job at starting to figure out what that was about, but I don't think it necessarily gets in enough for me to have been as happy with it as I really wanted to be.
You don't feel that you really got a very good sense of who he was as a person. I mean, after all, there was a lot of FaceTime with his family, in particular his sister and his nephew, and really quite revealing. I mean, they told stories of domestic violence, of child abuse, and in particular how that impacted Lee from a happy-go-lucky child to a kind of a really tortured adolescent, and then into adulthood.
He carried all of his experiences with him, as a lot of us do, obviously. But they touched on so many aspects of his story, but they didn't dig deep enough for me. Mm. And I think that's not a criticism necessarily of the documentary, because what they do have access to is really interesting.
Yeah.
But I think there's so much more of a story there. I think they just really briefly gloss over a few things that happened to him that I think are really worth exploring, just to understand him a little bit better.
Yeah, you're right there. There was a scene there with one of his lovers. I think it was Bill Murray, and not the famous actor.
Yeah.
I know.
You're like, yes. Hold on a minute.
Hang on.
Much better looking than Bill. But Bill touches briefly on a point where he mentioned that, that night did not go well. We went home, there was a lot of booze and a few punches.
Yeah.
And that was just glossed over and we just moved on. And obviously here, I think there was a real opportunity to see, did this domestic violence that he experienced as a child flow into his adult life and affect his relationships with physical violence? And that's what it hinted at to me, but it just sort of moved on.
Even the disclosure that he was HIV positive was literally one line in the movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, not that that had to become a huge arc, but it was so obvious that it impacted his life. He transformed in those last few years from being like a real kind of Cockney working class kid. Mm. You know, and Gina, you were saying before you really liked his style was always...
I liked his style.
Like he would always come out in like a tracksuit with, you know, gold chain or something. But in those later years, he became so much more fixated on his appearance.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it had to do with
that weight loss and the way he'd wear those kind of suits and the way he'd present himself.
They even touch on a small part in there about plastic surgery.
They never
explored it.
Oh, liposuction.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that he was fixated on the fact that he was starting to look at himself differently.
Yeah.
And I think when the artist starts looking at themselves as intently as they are putting out the art, it can actually be, it must be quite confronting. It must be really, must play on you. And I think, you know, not just for the fact that, I mean,
you'd be doubting your own creativity and your instinct, which is probably what has driven him for that period of time.
Because he was always looking outward.
Yeah.
And then to have to constantly look in and worry about all of those things on top of all the pressure.
Yeah.
You know, and they really, I think they, one thing they did really, really well was explain how his creativity was pushed so hard by himself.
Yes.
You know, he constantly was signing up to do more, to put out more. Yeah. It's doing like something like 16 collections a year at one stage. It's just like, it's ridiculous, and everything was different. And I just think that his story and however they choose to next tell it, because there is meant to be a biopic in the works.
Yeah, I saw that. It is. It's
and
coming.
Jack Connell was attached to it, who's a wonderful actor. He's just pulled out of it now, so I'm not sure where it's going to end up.
Just too intense.
I don't know. I think that there is probably, like I was saying, the battle for his legacy the talk is that his estate and his family are very much at odds on how they want to continue to tell his story. Mm. Because the reality is, it's been 8 years since he passed, and his label is more successful now than it was when he was alive. He's as prolific as he was, you know, through his team and everything. But he's become a brand above and beyond the person,
it's like Versace, that's a brand, Yves Saint Laurent, over and beyond.
But all of the big, you know, big designers, he's the one of the first ones to actually do it in this modern age. And it's all of that fascinates me. How does this working class kid from East London, who has no fashion background within his family or anything, just it's in that natural
big
instinct,
family too,
right? And he's just
one of six, just such a.
I think a lot of people looked up to him for what he did, but I don't know if we still really know a lot about who he was.
And do you know what? You have a good point there too, because what didn't come out in the documentary was the fact that he got married in Spain. And
really? You know,
yes, he got married, and there was a whole other relationship there, a marriage, a relationship, a breakdown, and a friendship. None of that came through. So, of course, you know, this is an artistic, edited version of McQueen. And you're right, you were only just getting one facet of that.
And we talked about this in the Myth interview, but how would you boys best describe who the audience for this current doco that's screening is now? People that want to know more about him, people just starting out, his fans.
I don't think
who would be the best place to go and see this.
I think if you know a lot about him or have a really good understanding of him, what you'll take away from this is a few interesting bits and pieces. But the really great thing is they have access to all of the runway stuff. So they actually include a lot of that in there. And that was probably, for me, the part that I just loved the most. And at the screening I went to,
like
people were screaming out things when they're, you know, it's like some of these runway shows are like 15 years old.
Yeah.
And you can hear these two young queens up the back screaming out like, genius! And, you know, I love you! And everything, which I was just like that. It
love
actually
that.
It was the best part about it. But if you're unaware of really who he is, or you're just wanting to, you know, find out more about this person who is achieving, you know, really legendary status, it's a good entryway to kind of then figuring out where to what more you'd like to know about him.
And if you love clothes,
if you love fashion, art, and if you
love supermodels, I mean, we've got a few supermodels in here, so it's not, he's not just the only famous person that's a center in this film.
So you both love this. I'm still yet to get to the cinema to see it, so I need to.
I really enjoyed it, but I'm still wanting more. I still think there's more to tell. And, you know, it's not like I need a Netflix 10-part series or anything, but I still think there's something there. And after reading a little bit more about what happened behind the scenes and just his family's struggle, I guess, with trying to have a say in his life, which seems really strange, but with, you know, the tragic way that his life ended, he wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah.
And so he left behind a huge, you know, fashion empire, I guess, and a lot of loose ends. And I think it's that part of it is the part that I wonder sometimes, you know, how does that then play out? And we've kind of seen it. I think we'll see it
through Whitney, we've seen it through so many. It's the common theme,
I guess. And I think there's another great documentary out there. This is a really good one to start with. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Well, I can say I really enjoyed this film, and I don't think I've been so emotionally involved in a documentary as I have with this one.
That's great.
And I think because the filmmaker here decided to really use the soundtrack from the piano quite heavily, which is a soundtrack, and Michael Nyman, who was the composer for the piano, was quite a muse for McQueen.
Yeah, right.
And so if you've ever watched The Piano, if you've ever listened to this music, it is very evocative, very emotional. And of course, it sort of evokes that roller coaster ride that he experienced. And, you know, I just really connected to that. And of course, you know, for me, The Piano is one of my favorite films. I must have listened to the soundtrack, as I told you off air, 1,000 times in the last 23 years. So of course,
I'm not Daniel, I'm not playing.
You know, it was really.
Unless Celine has done done a remix to one of them.
So, and I thought it was inspired too, because the emotion that the filmmaker was trying to evoke mirrored perfectly well with the music. And of course, you know, I was tied into this film via the music as well as the visual image and just the sheer madness of his life. I mean, it was helter skelter. It was a roller coaster. It was insane, and you just don't understand how he had the energy to do it. Like, I'm just dead impressed. He's a true savant. Really, he was.
I think we should be putting that out there. We'd like to hear from the listeners what you thought. If you've seen McQueen, if you're looking forward to McKellen, what sort of some of the queer documentaries? There's so many. There's so many really great ones. We touched on them in the intro as well. But yeah, we'd love to know, especially if you've seen McQueen recently, and we have that interview coming up with one of the directors. But drop us a line on air at joy.org.au or SMS us on 0427 joy949.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Outtakes here on Joy 94.9 with Gina, Alan and Conrad, and we're looking at artists, visionaries, luminaries,
queer
ones. And some of the amazing documentaries that are out at the moment. And we're very fortunate to have quite an exclusive little interview tonight. McQueen is directed by Ian Bonhoit. I'm getting the name issues happening here as well. And Peter Edigui. Outtakes producer Daniel sat down with Edigui to chat about the new documentary and why the time was right to spotlight the man behind the fashion empire.
We can all be discarded quite easily. You're there, you're gone. It's a jungle out there.
Peter, I wanted to begin with your motivations. I know you were very eager to work on this project, and looking at your filmography, you've worked on some big names, George Best, Marlon Brando. You've dealt with the history of the Bond franchise. I was trying to find a unifying factor and I couldn't really find one. What is it that motivates you when you put together these stories, when you work on these documentaries?
I've worked in fiction for years, and so I always look for something that is, it doesn't really matter whether it's documentary or whether it's fiction, but it has to be a great story to tell with a great emotional hinterland, and also a degree of complexity. You don't want someone who doesn't have that complexity, because then there's no mystery at the centre of it that you have to sort of like slightly unravel as a filmmaker. I think that with McQueen, there was a kind of like, we both were in London in the 90s, and if you were in London in the 90s, you couldn't avoid McQueen. He was everywhere. He was working with, you know, working on collaborations with other photographers. He sort of seemed to be by osmosis almost part of the whole young British artist, Brit art movement. He was at the centre of kind of cool Britannia. He was the name on everyone's lips, whether you were interested in fashion or not. So that was one aspect that was sort of like, you know, he was always there, and suddenly he was gone. You know, and why, when he seemed to have got acceptance from all of the people who initially were scandalised by what he was doing, why at that point did he end it all?
I love that you've touched on this kind of pervasive cultural effect that he had, because that's certainly something that is explored in the documentary. What do you think it was about him and about his artistic aesthetic that resonated so widely around the world and certainly in the UK?
Well, I think it was, you know, the 80s in London were quite beige. Someone uses that colour to kind of like talk about fashion in London in the 80s. But I think culturally we were all sort of like, you know, going through the years of Thatcherism, of get rich quick and so on. You had all of that was the energy that things had defined in the 80s pretty much. And then we had this kind of recession at the end of the 80s, and there was a kind of powerful reaction against that in the early 90s. You know, suddenly there was this new kind of like DIY culture. You could come from anywhere and achieve anything. And I think that there was a big sort of sea change, and, you know, you could come from a working class background with no money. And it was a bit like the 60s, you know? It was that kind of moment. The swinging 60s and cool Britannia have a very sort of strong link between them. All things have been cyclical, really, in life, aren't they? And I think that McQueen was at the centre of that. He was, as someone says in the film, he was sort of like part of that whole club culture. You made your clothes to go clubbing in. And he was kind of like putting a palette wrap on models and sending them out onto the runway. And he was sort of like introducing scenes and imagery that was taboo in fashion, you know, whether it was like skulls and skeletons and intimations of death or intimations of rape or, you know, big historical themes or whatever it was. He was putting things into the context of fashion that had no right to belong there. That's why he popped so much. This guy is the greatest craftsman that I've ever met. He learned his trade on Savile Row, and he can cut and tailor like no one else. And I remember thinking at the time, that's just so intriguing that you have this sort of like rebel spirit, but that it's rooted in tradition and in craft. I think for all those reasons, it was a film we're desperate to make, even if there were other people in the fashion world who didn't want to see a film made about McQueen. But that's another story.
Tell me about that story. Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of the people who were very close to him, and many of the people that we have who were in the film, many of the people who we talked to but didn't want to go on camera, and other people who were very close to him, I think what they all have in common is that these were working with him, being with him through that the 10, 15, 20 years of that journey.
Yeah.
Were the most inspiring time of their lives. Also the most difficult time in their life, because he was very demanding and could be very difficult. And then it just ended in this way that was so brutal, and that I know that they are all still processing. How could that happen, you know, aged just 40 at the height of his powers? And I think that's something that everyone is still processing. I think a lot of people aren't ready to talk about him yet. And so it took a long time for us to sort of show people that we had a very strong sentiment that, you know, that we wanted to make a film that reflected McQueen's own line, which was, if you want to know who I am, look at my work. And we felt that was the manifesto for making this film, was that one line of McQueen.
So let me ask you, I mean, having seen the documentary, I agree. I think you absolutely do manage to show us that McQueen was right. If we want to know him, we can look at his work and have a fairly good impression of who McQueen the man was. What do you think? I mean, if you had to whittle McQueen down into a few sentences, if you think his work says something about him, what do you think it says?
Well, I think what's very clear is that it says, here is someone who is kind of revolutionizing, whatever you want to call it, the art form, the craft, the commercial art, whatever you want to call it, that he is in. He's basically revolutionizing it. And he's revolutionizing not once, but several times. He's changing the way that the female silhouette, he's kind of reinventing that time and time and time again. On the other hand, he's not comfortable in the world that he's in. He loves the garment, the thing that he's working on. That's his form of sculpture or photography or fine art, whatever you want to call it. That's his medium. All of the other stuff, the preening sort of vanity of the fashion world, the way that the industry operates, the mores of that world, you know, the fact that it's about beauty, it's supposed to be about beauty and eternal youth, and, you know, all of that he's not comfortable with.
Yes.
And he's seeking, even at the height of his powers, he's seeking to subvert it. If you ask me for one thing, that's the common strand. He's a misfit, an outsider in this world. He's trapped in this world. He can't kind of quite get out of it. He longed to get out of it.
There's lots of people who say, I discovered McQueen. No one discovered Alexander McQueen. Alexander McQueen discovered himself.
I wasn't very good at school. I was always drawing clothes.
He was a very happy child.
He was passionate.
When Lee was 17, he said, I'll make you a couple of skirts. I've got to say, they fit like a glove.
He was drawing from all of these influences.
Jack the Ripper stalks his victims.
In the early years, Lee had seen violent things.
The darkness created genius.
Nobody could create emotions like McQueen.
You might find him distasteful, shocking, or misogynistic.
He made every single headline.
I don't want to do a show feeling like you've just had Sunday lunch. I want you to feel repulsed or exhilarated.
Going to the depths of one's mind, you start losing who you are, and it becomes the base that you can't get out of.
Family keep me grounded in a very superficial business.
He thought the whole system was against him.
His vision was so extraordinary.
Just genius.
I saw myself within the public eye as the gazelle.
and a gazelle always got eaten.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
I'm a 30-year-old actor earning £50 a week.
It used to be that it was my secret, my life, my profession. And what side of Ian McKellen am I going to present? Anything you could want from a human being, I found it working in the theatre particularly. I was able to just be, exist. I had no ambitions to become a film actor. There are very few actors who have been in two popular franchises. You people said we can't have Gandalf the Gay, but apparently you could. It exists in society. Be at ease with it. Admit there is a variety. My professional life is devoted to strangers. Stories bring human beings together. All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. One man in his time plays many parts.
Wow. That is the trailer for McKellen playing the part, which is a fascinating doco charting the life and the work, really, of Sir Ian McKellen. And I think what really comes out in this film is that the turning point for Ian was turning 49, and finally he just realised that, oh, I've really got to live my true self and bring my full self to everything that I do, and that's really what sort of transformed his life. And this documentary doesn't shy away from the fact that Ian is gay, was closeted for many years, and Ian had to sort of own up to a couple of occasions where he didn't stand up for the queer community, where he actually threw us under the bus a little bit, I would say. I mean, that's probably a bit harsh for me. And he had to own that and explain his position in that sense. But a brilliant doco.
When I sat down to watch this, I'm like, what can we learn about him that we don't already know? And the opening was brilliant. So, you know, we don't see him, we just hear him almost daring us to kind of guess which Ian are we going to meet today in this interview, and talking about, you know, he's always in the spotlight, always being interviewed, and he kind of has to navigate this, you know, private public Ian that he kind of gives to everyone, but, you know, which one were we going to meet? And then, you know, just after that kind of lovely intro, we have this gorgeous close-up of him where he looks a little bit pensive and unsure, and then we kind of zoom out and the documentary begins. But you are always kind of left going, okay, is this his private public self that he gives out to everyone? Because he touches on that again later. But it was a gorgeous documentary using lots of different styles, footage.
Tons of techniques in it, right?
Lots of techniques, actors, you know, performing him as a young Ian in the theatre.
I really loved that.
I really enjoyed that. That usually really annoys
me too.
Yeah,
I do it
in
really
documentary,
well.
But yes. They didn't overdo it in this one. Yeah. And it was just the right moments mixed around the stock footage.
Because it worked because there wouldn't have been any footage to use. So using the that young actor, you know, pretending to be him was very clever.
Yeah. So, Gina, what do you think? Do you think we got the real Ian? Do you think we got the public private Ian?
I don't think he knows.
Or did we really get him?
And after...
Or a mask.
I loved this doc. I was engaged the whole time. And it's a really slow, beautiful... I mean, he's the best voiceover artist if you ever needed one. I really enjoyed it. He had my attention the whole time. Do I believe that I had the real Ian? I don't think it mattered in the end for me. My favourite conversation was listening to him talk about death and how he thinks about death a lot, and him not having children and that sort of stuff. The stuff that I hadn't really seen before.
That's true.
Talking about the X-Men films and how important, he hated the costume he had to wear, but how important that, as an activist now, he kind of sees those films and why they're important in our film landscape. But it didn't matter. I was charmed by the man that I had in front of me
because you know that they're filming it over a series of different interviews, right? And you could sometimes tell.
You can sometimes hear it.
When he was in a different mood and everything, like all of us, like do this show time and time again. We're always different each Monday, you know, kind of when we're live. But I think
so true,
isn't it though? One of the things that I found really interesting was he touches on something that I think a lot of queer actors don't talk about a lot is that the majority of them usually spend at least, let's say, 20 to 30 years perfecting their act by pretending to be straight for that first part of their lives and using that part of their narrative, their personal narrative. It lends so well to when they then end up, you know, on stage or whatever, because they really are. He even says it himself. I was honing my craft every day. And he said, we all do it, but he said, in the case of being, as a, you know, a closeted gay man, I was working in multiple roles at multiple times. And he's talking about himself when he was a kid.
That was my favourite part, when he's in amongst the mix, when he's meeting the performance, when the royals come to visit.
Yes.
And he's not seeing the royals visiting, he's seeing the performance.
Yes.
And that's what kind of kicked off his interest, going, how do you put on a performance like that? See, he sees the lights and the theatrics, and that's what...
I think that is so quintessentially queer, a really gay way of expressing that thought as a young child, because
and seeing the world in that sense.
Because you're trying to figure out what it is about you that is different, why it is that it gets such a bad reaction, how can you hide it or play up on it. So, you know, you look at quite a few famous, particularly queer comics, they use that sometimes they go way over the top. They present themselves as a clown. Because then that way, at least they're in on the joke, and they just, they go along with it.
That's self-deprecating.
Yeah. And I just thought he nailed that so well, how he was like, you know, we all do it. We all wake up and wonder what costume we're going to put on for the day and who we're going to be portraying. But
we all do that?
That's what he said.
Oh.
I think subconsciously.
We all do it.
I don't know about you. Oh, no, I've just got the one.
It's not the costume, but it's almost the audience we're performing to. Is it our professional work audience? Is it our
my persona here when I'm with you all is totally different to the persona who I am when I'm at work.
Really?
Oh my God. Really?
Why is that?
Because
why shouldn't you have the same persona here as you do at work?
But it's not that I have a different persona.
Why can't it?
And this is where Ian's a master.
Bring your real self.
Oh, nobody wants to work.
Who wants that?
You know, bring it, live your whole life.
And this is where he masters the art of performing to an audience. And I remember that when he's first talking, because he did mostly theatre work, and a lot of people might not be aware, his career was built in the theatre. He really struggled to be on film and really didn't like being on film. But it's that moment that is kind of like, I rest all day so that I can bring my full self to an audience that have been working all day. So he's attuned to that audience, and that's by bringing your real self. Who is that audience? And he knows it.
Yeah.
He knows it for every interview, or he does now, for every interview. And I was charmed by him.
I find, too, there was a part in the documentary where he is talking about his peers, and he obviously has a lot of respect for certain people that he's worked with and everything.
Like Dame Maggie Smith.
And
Derek Judy Dench.
Patrick Stewart, who he's so fond of, and they still do so much work together. Mm-hmm. But the part with Judy Dench was one of my favourite parts when he says, she's so incredible and everyone loves her, and he said that's actually the worst part of being on stage with her, is that everyone loves her so much that they can't take their eyes off her, and then you're having to compete with that, and that becomes really annoying. And I thought, that is the perfect Ian McKellen compliment, right? Like, you are slightly better than me. You're taking the attention away from me because you're so good. And I thought... the fact that that's not in the trailer is a bit of a baffle to me, but it was such a great moment. I actually rewound it and played it again.
That was from Hamlet. That was the film production for Hamlet.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember watching that when I was in year 11, all those years ago. And totally knew who Judi Dench was, had no idea who he was, and I was surprised to see this come up again in this film. I went, oh, my God, really?
So clever.
And Richard III, I didn't realise that was his first film kind of foray film that got finished because he produced it never wants to produce there. Again.
Makes sense.
And I remember watching that going, I had no idea that was his first.
Mm.
There's something also very, the fact that he did, he really touches on that whole idea of, you know, knowing yourself and being confident in yourself and understanding who you are as a person and then experiencing a level of fame like he has and two huge franchises, really well-respected career, but basically becoming famous at, like, what, 55, 60 is, like, the perfect way to do it. You've got all that shit out of the way. You've had all
yourself.
Your fun.
Yeah.
You've gone under the radar completely. You've had all the good times. You've had your Lindsay Lohan period. And then, you know, you come out the other end and everyone thinks you're this really well-revered, fine gentleman.
He didn't have the Lindsay Lohan experience because he never thought of himself as a good-looking man. No, that's really saddened me to hear that.
I still think he had a few good moments.
He would have had a few good moments. But, and you're right, you know, I mean, that was the other thing that came out at the end of the film when they asked him, what do you think about the most? And he says, I think about death.
Death. Yeah.
But also, too, I think later on in that same conversation, he says, you know, if I could go back, I would tell my younger self that I was a good-looking chap.
Yeah.
I was a good-looking chap. And he didn't feel like he knew it at that time.
Yeah.
He was very so self-conscious that it affected his confidence.
Such a sweet way to acknowledge that, too, though, like to recognise that. I think a lot of people get to his age and still don't figure that out.
Yeah.
And it's not that he was being just modest. I mean, he clearly took on roles where he wore disguises and stuff. So he clearly wasn't. He wanted to hide his true self.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's what I like, the magic of this kind of documentary, even towards the end. It's like, well, you're clearly still hiding your true self.
Yeah.
And that's
there's a
okay.
moment. Yeah. There's moments where he lets you in. But he's also, there's one part in the documentary where they are using, you know, a lot of the footage from the different things that he's done. But he talks about how you can see the difference before in the two roles that he did, that they used as examples of before he came out to when he, after he came out, and how his actual persona was so different in the way that he was acting. And he kind of implied that he didn't know how to temper his emotions, or he couldn't necessarily gauge what he was supposed to be doing in that moment, because with that particular role, I think what he was meant to be quite aggressive and quite confronting with this person, but he came off as kind of quite hysterical and camp. He was really struggling to show his emotions at what he thought they should be, and that his real self would come out and he wouldn't know how to then measure that. And I thought that was a really interesting way, because now as a, you know, as Ian McKellen, when you watch him on screen, he's so confident. Impressive. And, you know, he's Magneto, he's Gandalf, he has no problem.
He's not Dumbledore.
Control.
I love that.
Oh my God, that's so brilliant.
Okay.
So brilliant.
But can I sort of bring our conversation back to this film actually displaying the real self of Ian McKellen?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, throughout his life he's had numerous relationships, or a number of relationships, but that really does not get explored in this film. Yeah. I mean, we talk about the fact that he talks about the fact that he's a gay man, he talks about him coming out, he talks about his sexuality and the impact on his work, but we actually don't get to hear about his relationships.
I don't think that was because...
He says, that was my boyfriend at the time.
But I don't think
that... didn't he find out about that?
I don't think they
I
wanted...
Didn't need it.
I don't think they wanted to do that, though. I don't think that was... Because it's not...
It's about the craft. It's about him as a performer.
It seemed more like that. Yeah.
But if we're looking at him as a full person, a biography always talks about their... About their significant relationships, whether it's romantic or not.
But he talks about the fact that he doesn't really feel like he's had that.
But there was the loving Cambridge.
There was the loving
Cambridge for a number of years, and then you find out later on that he died of AIDS later on in his life, and like you could feel some emotion in his voice there there then, but we didn't actually get to hear the story. And I felt okay, yes, we know you're gay, but tell us about your love, your romantic life.
See, I was fine with that because it is about Ian giving us the public-private persona, which is the performer. And it's the performer's journey, and it's him learning the craft, falling in love with the craft. That's what I immediately thought this film was going to be about, and it gave me that. Didn't get into those personal, private.
I think he was.
That's a missed opportunity. It's a missed opportunity. And I think that the title gives it away. Playing the part.
Yeah, he's playing the part.
I think as a person who was in the public eye, didn't come out until he was 49, says a lot about how his romantic relationships would have been conducted.
Yeah.
All in private.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't think he would have been the easiest person to be in a relationship with.
It sounds like that. He was traveling all around the country, always in theatre. And
you know, he's probably
always in character as well.
A bit artistic.
Yeah.
You know, we know what they're like.
Do we?
But I think I wasn't as disappointed with not getting that deep with McKellen as I was with McQueen.
Why is that?
Because I felt like for McQueen, it shaped a lot more of his life because he was an openly gay man who was living in a very open life, presenting himself as such, and I feel like not exploring that further in context of what he did in terms of his life is much more of a missed opportunity than with Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Because I think McKellen was pretty upfront with the fact that it's been a big part of his life that he does regret, that he has missed out on having that thing to share.
That full experience.
That legacy as well. I don't think his legacy he thinks of as being what we would think of. Mm. I think he feels like he's not leaving something behind that he should have been, whether it being a great love or family or something. It feels like he really touched on that with some of the comments that he made.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous, and I recommend some of the funniest bits are over the end title credits.
Oh, the credits are brilliant.
When his phone goes off and he gets a bit of a shock.
There's a really lovely film that came out, I mentioned it earlier, called Tea with the Dames, and it's a documentary as well with four of the great dames of British acting.
Is that Judy Dench?
Judy Dench, yeah. Maggie Smith, Joan Plowright, and the fourth one who's wonderful as well.
Not Helen Mirren?
No.
Seriously?
Another one. She's really great as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, I suggest if you ever, you know, when this film comes out in a couple of weeks on Jim.
Or Maggie Smith.
Jim
Dame
Lewis.
Maggie Smith.
No, that's been out.
Already been mentioned out, that one.
Yeah. Oh, did we?
This is a really great little film to catch up afterwards, because they touch on very similar things, but much more from a female perspective, and it's more of a kind of, you know, the cool broads hanging out swapping stories. So good.
Gossip.
Maggie Smith.
It was trading gossip.
Drinking champagne. Can't go wrong.
And trading jibes at each other.
Oh, they're sort of
like, pour little poison darts, getcha. Yeah.
No, they love each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's go pay some bills and then we'll come back and talk some more doco.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
I'm Not Your Negro is a film about James Baldwin, and it really is James Baldwin recounting the story about his three friends that were murdered, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, and Martin Luther King, and also touching on the issue of race in America and how the image of the Negro was created through Hollywood films. And James Baldwin was this brilliant intellectual, great writer.
The best, really.
Right? And also an important person of the 20th century who has impact on the 21st.
I want to come to some of the themes that are explored in the documentary, but before we do, we've touched on Baldwin and why Baldwin is so important. Why do you think Baldwin really is the foremost mind of the 20th century?
I think because Baldwin gets to the essence of everything he talks about, every issue, whether it's race, whether it's gender issues, anything you can think of. And Baldwin, as a gay man, I think, has had a full-time experience as being the other.
Yes.
as being a black man, a poor black man from Harlem at the time, has had the experience of being the other. And also being in exile in France gave him an ultimate experience of being the other and really being able to see America from a different lens. I think he has this ability to look at situations that were important to all of us, but really deconstruct them and give them back to us in a very clear way, so that when you read Baldwin, no matter who you were, he was able to explain to you why you felt the way you felt. And so he gave you that power back into your hands.
But he did it in such elegant and compelling ways.
And to be able to do that, I mean, that's incredible, right?
Oh,
so, and even when he confronted people, although he was passionate, even if angry, but he always did it from a position of love. So you had to listen.
The future of the Negro in this country is precisely as bright or as dark as the future of the country. It is entirely up to the American people and our representatives. It is entirely up to the American people whether or not they're going to face and deal with and embrace this stranger whom they maligned so long. What white people have to do is try to find out in their own hearts why it was necessary to have a nigger in the first place. Because I'm not a nigger, I'm a man. But if you think I'm a nigger, it means you need it. If I'm not the nigger here, and you invented him, you the white people invented him, then you gotta find out why. And the future of the country depends on that, whether or not it's able to ask that question.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather since my man and I ate together.
Outtakes here on Joy 94.9, and we're talking about we're chilling.
We're swaying in the breeze here.
Talking about queer visionaries, artists who have been immortalized recently in the documentary form. We've touched on Alexander McQueen and Ian McKellen. And we're going to finish up this evening with a little bit of a look back on someone who we have spoken about, and we've touched on this documentary, I Am Not Your Negro. A really great story and in-depth look at James Baldwin.
Oh, yeah, James. I never really knew much about James Baldwin until I'd watched this documentary. And it's absolutely fascinating, the story of this poor black African-American in New York, and who incredibly brilliant, like a true intellectual, and how he moves in life and throughout the times where civil rights movement was coming into being, and he was instrumental in some way in pushing that along, and had relationships with some of the key figures. So, you know, getting that behind the scenes look of what it was like living in America, you know, post Second World War and the civil rights movements, for someone who was so instrumental in having that done, and from a gay perspective as well. I mean, it was mind blowing, really.
It was a real true, yeah, and I loved that in that interview that Daniel did a while ago now, the director that he's talking with says, you know, he was the true other. You know, he was a gay black man living in the United States during a time where being either was quite out there. And then he, you know, moves to France, puts himself in exile, and then basically becomes the gay American black man living in Europe, you know, like just pushing himself to the extremes. And it was a real, I mean, he was such an intellectual and such a smart person. If you ever want to go down a rabbit hole, I highly suggest jumping on YouTube and just Googling, searching for James Baldwin interviews, because he is such a master of, nowadays we would say, throwing shade, but he's such a great, he never fails to have an argument to back up whatever it is that he's talking about, but he delivers it in such a great way where he can be quite cutting and dismissive.
Do you think it's shade though?
Oh yeah.
Or do you think it was just like you are?
He's explaining to you in such a way that when you finally get to the end of the point, you're like,
oh, you just threw it on me.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're actually just pointing out the fact that I'm an idiot.
Idiot.
Yeah. But it's that genuine way that he truly knew what he was talking about. But there's also, and something I think that is really important with, it drives a lot of people, is that he had an equal measure of anger mixed in with his, who he was as a person and what it meant to be James Baldwin. And, you know, to be walking around the streets as him, knowing that, you know, you're a public figure and you're, you know, gay, black, in that time, I just think, you know, there's, again, great documentary, but there's probably another three documentaries in there that you could pull out of his life.
And I think you're bang on the money there. I think that sense of anger really comes through, and that really comes through in his interviews as well. You know, that cutting, insightful commentary that he has, but at the same time too, you could feel the rage boiling underneath.
And his
His
legacy lives on. I was recently, when I was in the States, went to a music festival called Afropunk, and they had all these quotes of his up on the screen behind one person who was doing all of these kind of spoken word pieces as well. And there was a recent comparison after a few of the things that happened over the weekend with Serena Williams.
Oh.
One of the guys, who a sports writer, was writing about, you know, that anger that comes out of being constantly pushed down and treated in a different way manifests itself sometimes in ways that aren't very nice.
Mm.
And I went, James Baldwin was called out for that on various talk shows. People were like, you know, he was invited on to share his opinion, and then he just came out and he was really angry and he was, you know, really attacking on people. Well, you know, to get to that point, something not great happens.
This is the reality, folks. You want to see the real situation. This is it. This is what you've created. Now suffer the consequences.
Get on YouTube, watch his interviews. Amazing.
Another great doco, probably good to pair with this one, would be Jules Catch One. And again, we had the interview with the filmmaker C. Fitz, because that captures, it's basically documents the oldest black-owned disco in America.
Cool.
And its owner, Jewel Thace Williams, who I think for 42 years ran this club. Highly recommend people watch it. You can get it on the streaming services. And you know, it shows her closing the club because people aren't going out anymore and they're stuck to their phones and looking at their devices. So check out that podcast.
So this was a lesbian
venue.
Owner. Yes.
Yeah. Well, no. Gay. It basically, there was still a time where gays and lesbians and people of colour were being turned back from nightclubs, and she thought, well, bugger this, I'm going to open up my own. And that's what she did.
One for the rainbow family.
Absolutely.
So I think we can sum up that we love hearing and seeing our own stories, and it's really great, even when the stories themselves aren't always, you know, the easiest things to watch or have, you know, these rainbow endings.
Yeah.
It's really great that we're seeing so many great documentaries coming out. So McQueen's in cinemas now, McKellen's coming out
end
in
September.
A couple of weeks.
Yep.
And most of the other ones that we've touched on are going to be on streaming services or out soon. But I highly recommend you go and check out a good documentary over the next month or so.
Yeah. Well, you've been listening to Outtakes, and you're on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.